listening to Radio Arian. At RadioArian.com.
Welcome to Arian Insights. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm very pleased to announce that our guest today is from the Nordic Resistance. Now, some of our listeners may only know of the Resistance from their media outlet, Nordfront, but they're actually a pan-Nordic group promoting national socialist principles across Finland, Norway, and Sweden. Today, we have a well-known figure from their Finland branch joining us, Mr. Juhani Karanen, who is group leader of the city of Oulu and also the host of the Resistance radio talk show Rima Radio, or Rune Radio in English. Juhani, welcome to the program and thanks for coming on. I've really been looking forward to interviewing you.
Yeah, hello everybody, and thank you for inviting me here.
Well, I'm sure we're going to have a really good program for people today. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Finland at the moment, but I think what we'll start off with is some information about the Nordic Resistance. Now, they make some of the best propaganda, I think, that I've seen, and they have a really good reputation among white nationalists. And I'm particularly thinking of the Multiculturalism Comes to Saltsjöbaden video, if I'm pronouncing that right, the flag on the crane video that's filmed by a drone. And there's one where that shows the Resistance taking part in ideological training at headquarters, and then they're outside learning survival skills before going out leafleting and interacting with the public, when suddenly they get attacked by leftists, and then they demonstrate how the flagpoles can quickly be turned into defensive weapons if that ever happens. And I think I should also mention that the Resistance always look very smartly dressed and approachable, which I think is something that other groups should emulate. Now, all of these videos have made a very good impression on English-speaking nationalists. And I was wondering, how long have the Resistance been going and how long have the Finnish branch been around for? And do you have any comments on those videos?
Thank you for the kind feedback. We appreciate that you have you like our videos, and it shows that our style is going the right way. As for the history, we need to go back to the early 90s, actually. If we talk about the history of the NRM, back then, Klaas Lund, who is a former leader of NRM, started with his comrades White Aryan Resistance. That was a militant organization in Sweden, and it was really radical with their tactics. They could be compared to the Order, if you know the Order from the United States. Later, the White Aryan Resistance was seized, and in the late 90s, the Swedish Resistance Movement was founded. Then, 2008, the Finnish Resistance Movement was founded by Henri Kolappa, and it has been operated since then. Then, 2011, the Norwegian Resistance Movement was established, and 2013, Danish Resistance Movement was established.
Oh, I was just going to ask about that. I wondered whether I got it correct earlier there at the beginning when I mentioned Finland, Norway and Sweden. So Denmark have joined as well now. And it's been a bit of an evolution from, well, over the last 10 years or so then, really, changing from Swedish resistance movement to Nordic resistance movement and involving all the Nordic nations. Well, apart from the activism that I've just been mentioning with these videos, what other sort of activism do you get involved with?
Our typical weekly activism consists of leaflet distribution, putting up posters and stickers, self-defense training, hiking in the nature, sports, discussion evenings, and of course every city group has their own speciality, like here in our city, it's the radio podcasts. You could say that in a way, what kind of activism a group does depends on the personalities that are involved in the group. There is no, there is no limit, like what you can do as a group. It really depends on the people, what kind of specialities they have. Like maybe somebody is a professional on self-defense training, so there could be more and more those kind of activities. Maybe somebody is good at giving presentations, so he can give presentations inside the group. Basically, like I said, there is no limit on it, basically.
So it depends on the sort of characters and the skills that the people that are involved. I suppose that's the National Socialist ideal of encouraging people and getting them to be the best they can and bringing people out of their shells and getting them to work at constant improvement. And if you've got people that can do something, I think that they should do something. You know, there's no point hiding your light under a bushel. And one of those videos that I mentioned, I mean, that's why I think the video is so impressive, because it shows the difference in activities that you do. You're moving from the ideological training, where you're all sitting there studying, to being outside and you're out there in the woods camping, and then you're learning your self-defense, your survival skills, and then you see it all come together where you're out leafleting and interacting, and then you get attacked and you start using the self-defense skills. So that video, I think, was a really well-made one, because it shows you just how all those activities can be used to further the aims of nationalism, and specifically national socialism, as the Nordic resistance movement seem to be quite proud of their national socialist allegiances. Could you explain a bit about the political aims of the Nordic resistance movement for those of us who have only been aware of your activities?
Yes, of course. Well, our short-term plan is to establish new city groups, as many as possible. For a long-time plan, establish a resistance society, basically where we are able to provide services to our people so they don't have to be dependent on the government. And then by time, then replace the current regime with our National Socialist Society. We have taken first steps of providing services to our people. In this, our project called Finnish Aid is the main force. Under the Finnish Aid, currently we have street patrols, clothes distribution to poor Finnish families. Actually, there was a bread line in our capital, and our activists went there to help them out. They distributed food to the people who were in the need of the food. Then we have medicine counseling. We got professional pharmacists who take questions by phone about medicine. Like these days, people are getting so many different medicines from the doctor, so there is always wondering, like, should I take these so many medicines and all that? And she's by profession, she is a pharmacist, so she can do give advices to people about the medicine and all.
Well, that's really useful. I mean, people do get very worried about what they've been given and what they've been given by the doctor. And that's an example of the people with the different skill sets that you have in the Nordic resistance, putting them to good use to looking out for our folk. Well, how have your street patrols been getting on then? We hear a lot about the Sons of Odin. They've been in the news, particularly over here. Do you have a good working relationship with them? Are members of your group members of the Sons of Odin as well?
Currently, as we, our movement, our policy is that you can't be part of, you can't be a member of two organizations. So if you were a member of the resistance movement, you can't be a member in the Soldiers of Odin. But what comes to the Soldiers of Odin, they have our sympathies, basically. They're doing a good job, like, I can't deny that. And I look forward, like, what kind of, how many street patrols they're able to organize in the coming spring as the refugee crisis gets more worse. And I think it could be like a possibility that we could do some kind of cooperation. I don't think it's an impossibility, but we have to plan that out. About our street patrols, they have good reception from the public. We were the first ones that started the street patrols. It was back in the 2014 when there was these immigrant gangs in our capital that were beating up Finnish youth just because they were Finnish. So our guys organized street patrols there, and they got really warm reception from the people, because like that was like a thing that everybody were like talking, that it would be cool if somebody would organize these street patrols, and we were the first ones that did it, and it has got a really good reception from it.
That's excellent. I was going to ask, had you seen more support from the public for the group since the invasion really started in earnest last year at all? Has there been more support just recently, do you think?
Absolutely. Like last autumn when the refugee invasion began, we had huge amount of contact from people. Actually, there was a problem because there were so many contacts that we couldn't arrange the interviews in a fast speed. Basically, we had to put two times. We had to put news on our site that we are sorry that we haven't been able to answer to all of the membership applications because there are so many of them. So it was really great to see that people are actually waking up to this madness that is going on in Europe. And for the next spring, I believe this same thing will happen, as the refugee invasion will only get more worse.
Yeah, and there's been some pretty high-profile crimes by these immigrants, such as the rape that happened in Kempele of a 14-year-old girl. I mean, we heard about that one. That was really bad, and that involved the prime minister or something. That was his village, or he was something to do with it. So he had a bit of a shock himself. Yeah, have your police been told to hide the crimes of the immigrants, like has happened in Sweden and in Germany?
Basically the same has happened here. I remember our group was participating in a refugee center information seminar last autumn. There was a town council member representative from Red Cross and a police representative in the seminar, and they answered questions the local people had about the upcoming refugee center. The police representative told to these Finnish families, old and young people, that this refugee center will not affect the security situation of locals, which is, like we all know, which is an absolute lie. And then there was a situation last New Year's Eve when 1,000 refugees gathered in one place in our capital, and they were obviously planning to do the same kind of barbaric act as they did in Germany. But the police was able to intervene there, and the refugees didn't move to the center of the capital. But the police basically admitted that the same thing was about to happen in our capital as in Germany, Cologne, if police didn't intervene. But later, the National Bureau of Investigation said that nothing of sorts was about to happen. So basically, they lied that nothing like that was about to happen. And funny thing is that this person who gave this statement from the National Bureau of Investigation, his name is Thomas Elfgren. He works for the National Bureau of Investigation, and he has adopted 5 boys and 1 girl from Rwanda earlier, and these so-called children are over 18 years old. Thomas Elfgren is also one of the leading members in association called Rasmus that claims to fight against racism and intolerance, and they spread all these anti-white lies. You just like have to wonder how can person like this be in National Bureau of Investigation when he clearly has multi-agenda?
Yeah, I would say he's clearly compromised there with if he's adopting these Rwandan blacks, then he's clearly compromised. I heard that these attacks were prevented in Helsinki. I heard that your police had kept them in one area, or kept them in their refugee centres, while all these attacks went on in Cologne and elsewhere in Germany. So at least you were prevented from that happening. But then they denied that they did this. Then that's what happened. So Are the police sympathetic to your street patrols at all? Do they support the idea of your street patrols?
Well, there was, I read, actually our website reported that the police is kind of like 50-50 about the street patrols, because it was earlier in 2014, I believe, it was the chief of police that called that there should be street patrols. But when we did the street patrols, then he claimed that we don't need the street patrols. So, and just recently there was also quite like an argument going on in the police among the police leaders that are the street patrols all right? And so I don't know. I would say that the police, they're probably most of the field police, like who do the work on the ground, are probably somewhat sympathetic. But we have to remember that police is, the fact is that the police is working for our enemy, which is the Zionist-run government. So, I don't know, maybe the field police can be somewhat sympathetic, but I don't believe the leadership of the police is that sympathetic to us.
I think they'll end up getting more supportive as time goes on, as they realise that that more and more crimes are being committed, and that less crimes get committed in the places where the street patrols are. And the street patrols don't actually have to get involved, they just have to show an intimidating presence on the streets. And that seems to prevent the foreigners from coming out and attacking the local populations, from what I've heard. And I'm sure you must get a lot of support from the public for being there. I mean, women and children are obviously going to feel safer if there's a Finnish street patrol there. The police can't be everywhere all at once. So I think you'll probably see more support for these street patrols as time goes on, and as people see what's happening around them. How bad is the diversity agenda there? Do you have any idea how many Finns have been displaced by the foreign hordes? In London, 60% of the white British have been replaced by foreigners already. And I'm just sort of wondering what the numbers are like, the figures are like for Finland.
Well, currently in big cities the situation is not that bad, like in London, like you said, but the smaller towns that just recently got these refugee centers are pretty bad, because like when they place these refugee centers, these refugees that come to the refugee center then might even add like 20% to the population of the town. So they're The Finnish population, the towns are pretty, they will become outnumbered in the future when more and more of these refugees come. Like, I think there has been like situations where when the refugee center is placed in some town, that they put refugees there, the population has risen by 50%. So it's really crazy, like how they turn these really nice small towns to these really like anarchic chaos towns, basically. But in Sweden, in the city of Malmö, actually it was recently reported that over 50% of the population consists of immigrants, and Malmö has over 300,000 people living in it. So currently, it's not in Finland, it's not that bad as in Sweden or in Germany or in Britain, but we're approaching that point when we can say that it's about the same level.
Yeah, I've seen the reports of what it's like in Sweden. It's terrible in Sweden. It's obviously not that bad in Finland. What are the benefits like for them when they get to Finland? What's the welfare like? Is it similar to Sweden, or is it less than what they would get in Sweden? I'm wondering if it's the money prevents them from wanting to come to Finland so much. Because I've seen pictures of Iraqis sort of leaving because they haven't been given enough. When they were in Finland, they're unhappy that they hadn't been given enough by the Finns. Did you have are you a bit more strict with your welfare system than Sweden are?
Yeah, I guess these stories, like these refugees actually leave Sweden because they want to come to Finland. I don't know. Is there? There is probably like a rumor going in the among the refugees that Sweden is not that good as Finland is. But then they come to Finland, and there has been some incidents where they have left our country. But it's mostly because it's so cold here. but I guess it's. I would say that it's probably about the same level as in Sweden, the welfare and all. They get good services here and all that, but it's about the same level, I would say.
It's so ludicrous, isn't it? When you think of someone from Africa, a dark-skinned savage from Africa that's used to running around naked, suddenly in the freezing cold in Sweden, claiming that that's the only place where they can be safe from war. And it's just absolutely ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's crazy, like, these people leave Middle East and they get to Greece, which is a safe country, then they have to go this whole way through to Sweden or Finland, and then they can claim that they are in a safe country. So it doesn't make any sense. They should be stopped in Greece or in the Southern Europe overall. Or better, we should maybe build a wall in Southern Europe so they can't get here.
Definitely. I think that's a good idea. Just like Trump, build a wall. But did you have a problem with the diversity, with the multiculturalism before these quote-unquote refugees started coming? Or has it really been just over the last couple of years with them claiming that they're escaping war? Have you seen much of this diversity agenda before now?
Definitely it was becoming worse and worse, but we had a few thousand immigrants in Finland before the refugee invasion. So basically it wasn't that bad, like, especially if you compare our situation to Sweden, where in Sweden it's horrible. But here it's nothing close what Sweden had. But I think Finnish people are really... really clear-minded how the multiculturalism works, like what kind of problems it brings, because all the time these anti-immigration parties got really big vote and lots of support from the public, because people are really aware, like, what kind of problems multiculturalism brings here.
Well, yeah, so it does seem like you have a very active nationalist scene there in Finland. You've got your Envi Lehti, I've been really successful over the last year. You've got the immigration form, a HOMA, you've got your group, the Nordic Resistance. Can you talk a bit about nationalism in Finland and what the nationalist political parties there are that you have there, and explain to the listeners all about the this immigration forum, the HOMA? Because I hear that's been really successful. That's been really successful at helping people towards nationalism, people that weren't nationalists before.
Absolutely. Well, for Envi Lehti, they have cleared some room for anti-immigration message, and they have also post articles questioning did the Holocaust happen. They even promised to pay €10,000. The Holocaust happened, so they have done a good job providing a new platform for anti-immigration and anti-Zionist message. What comes to HOMA forum, it's an anti-immigration forum, and it's quite popular, but it has users from different ideologies, conservatives and liberals who do not understand why race is important to nation, and some of them support Israel and Zionists. But I bet there are still some members who are sympathetic to National Socialist ideals, and I bet there are National Socialist users in the forum. I have understood that you can't really talk about our movement in the forum, and you can't really post any links to our site, because you get banned if you do that. And the founder of the forum, who is Matthias Turka, went out and said that Envi Lehti and our site produces filth. So it's pretty interesting. I think... And also, this Matthias Turkila, who founded the HOMA Forum, he is also a member of the True Finns Party. that claims to be some sort of nationalist party, but are really a false opposition and pro-Zionist, what do you call a kosher nationalist. But they used to be a little bit more towards to the nationalistic aspects. But as they got more and more public support, they started to drop these anti-immigration stances and anti-European Union stances because they wanted to get more easy votes, basically. So, like, after all, when we look at the history of them, we can only conclude that they are only opportunistic people, basically.
So they're like populists, they're a bit similar to UKIP is what I've heard. They started off as you say, anti-immigration, but now they've changed and they're just trying to do what what they think people want them to say rather than having a strong ideology behind them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a good comparison, like when you said UKIP, I think they are pretty much the same. They're really pro-Zionist, like I mentioned. They have, the founder of the party, Timo Soini, who is also the leader of the party, that he wrote in his personal blog that he likes Jews and Israel. So, quite interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, it tells you quite a lot about them if they say that. We have problems with groups like English Defence League in Britain, and they talk about how much they like Israel. It's like these people don't seem to be aware of such a large role that the Jews play in calling for more immigration into our countries. It's good that you have this anti-immigration forum, but it's not so good that it won't allow links to the more truthful sites like your own. But I think it must have played a role in helping people to come to our ideas. It must be leading people in the right direction, even if it is kosher, as you say.
Yeah, I agree. Like these mainstream anti-immigration parties, they kind of make the road in a way, so it's easier to be a anti-immigration, it's easier to have a anti-immigration stance on the immigration, and from that it's more easy to be radicalized, basically, and people are more acceptable to the truth of the National Socialist ideals. But also, like you ask about the national scene in Finland, currently, like, there aren't that many groups in our country. Probably the most serious group is our group, the Nordic Resistance Movement. Then there is a nationalist group that is called Suomen Sisu, which is, it has the members are from a big scale, like basically they don't have a, like, you can't be part of the leftist or you can't be part of the rightist parties. They basically are like, they aren't connected to any political party, even though there are a lot of members from the True Finns party, and the leader of this Suomen Sisu is Olli Immonen, who is a parliament member of True Finns. But I think Olli Immonen, he's a quite interesting personality, because there was, last summer, there was like a big scandal when he wrote in his Facebook that he can't wait that this bubble of multiculturalism will blast. And he got really a lot of heat from it. And actually, earlier it happened that our activists were having a remembrance event for a Finnish person called Eugen Schaumann, who shot this Russian general governor back in the 1800s. Our guys were giving remembering basically, and at the same time, the Olli Immonen from the Suomen Sisu and from the True Finns was in the place too with his friends, and so what happened was that our guys and they took like picture together. And then it was released to the public, and there was like a huge uproar about it because Olli Immonen was in this memorial event with these neo-Nazis, you know. So it was pretty crazy, the media uproar about it. So I think there is, I think, like I said, I think Olli Immonen is an interesting personality, but I hope he sees that the true Finns do not really drive the cause of the Finnish people, and he should basically leave the party and, I don't know, maybe join our group or maybe start his own.
Yeah, you don't think he could influence it from within? You don't think he could rise to lead it from within then? You think he would be better off leaving?
Yes, yes. Yeah, I believe that could be possibility, but I think it will be, I personally believe it will be extremely difficult to influence the True Finns party from inside, because it seems like the leader of the party, Timo Soini, is like a really authoritative leader in the party. This is what, this is kind of image I have get, because like, there already was a situation where one of the True Finns, I believe it was the True Finns youth leader, basically claimed that there should be a discussion. Is our line about EU right to our principles? And basically, Timo Soini, who is the leader of the True Finns, said that he doesn't care what anybody thinks. Like, they can leave the party if they don't like the line of the party, basically.
So he won't stand for any change within that, then, trying to clamp down on any dissent. This seems a bit symptomatic, actually, of what's been going on over there as well in Finland in the last year. I heard that all the comment sections got shut down all over Finland, and the only comment section that was still left open was MV Lehti. Is this true? Could you talk about that a bit? And do you think that helped with the rise of MV Lehti, the alternative Finnish news site?
Yeah, there was, it was last year that some of the media pages shut down their comment sections, especially on the anti-immigration, in the immigration news, because people were posting these comments that they don't want immigration and they're anti-immigration, and all these anti-immigration comments were coming in the articles and to the news. So they decided that these are like, racist trolling comments, so they decided to shoot the comment sections down, and so this way basically people saw that the media is one-sided and they are the basically like the tool of the establishment to run in the multicultural agenda. So I think that probably gave us some kind of spike to the MV Lehti and also to our site. And there is also a third one called Magneti Media, which produces lots of anti-Zionist and anti-immigration news too.
So you've got quite a few alternative sites there that are popping up, that are catering to the people, because they must be seeing that there's a clampdown on free speech. We've seen the same thing happen to any of the news articles that are talking about immigration or talking about Islam over here in Britain. They've shut down on the comments, but they haven't sort of blanket shut down all the comments on the site. I noticed your website was down a while back, and now you've got a new one. I was wondering, was that taken down by denial of service attacks? This seems to be a favourite tactic of the left. They're incapable of winning an honest debate, so they just seek to silence us instead by attacking our websites. Have you had a problem with that at all?
Yeah, actually, what happened was that when there was some time ago, there was a demonstration in Stockholm when our activist got attacked by police. What happened was that Anonymous Sweden actually attacked against our sites because they thought that we attacked some bystanders. which is a complete lie. So what happened was that they did the DDoS attack and our sites got down basically, but now they're up again, of course. I don't know. It seems like the official, basically our enemies have these. Well, you could say that these are quite pathetic attacks against us, because this doesn't really affect anything, because we could repair it and like really fast, really quickly. So I think it's quite common that they attack our websites. So I don't know, like I saw that the website of the National Action was taken down by DDoS attack. So yeah, it's quite common that they attack against our websites.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. I thought that's probably what was happening there. It just seemed to be the only way that they can respond. They can't actually counter anything that we say, so they just seek to silence it instead. But our voices are getting louder and louder, and Nordfront have been producing regular podcasts for quite a while now, and your own outfit, Rimmer Radio, some of them have been in English. I was wondering, how is your radio station going, and what sort of subjects do you cover?
Yeah, our radio program is going great. There is our show started last year. It's called Studio 204, where we talk about foreign and domestic news and also cover the latest happenings with the resistance movement. Of course, it's in Finnish, but still, and also there started a new, like a cultural program called Valkoista Kohina. And in that show, they cover new music albums and movies, and there is probably going to be books in the future. So it's going great. And I think with these radio programs, it's a good way to reach new audience and reach new people to our message.
I think it's good because it provides an alternative from the television. People wake up to nationalism and what's going on, and they don't want to be spending their time watching their television anymore. What can they do? Well, you've got nationalist podcasts, you've got nationalist radio that you can listen to and that you can take part in as well. Call into the talk shows and interact with people. I think it provides a really important part of the scene is these podcasts that we can make. And of course, before then, it was cassettes at the National groups would produce cassettes and mail them out to people, but now people can just go online and listen to other nationalists and hone their ideology and learn what other people have learned. And it's great that you're doing cultural shows as well, talking about books and films and music and looking at it all from a nationalist perspective. I think that's really positive. I see you've got a couple of programs, I think, you've done in English. Have you got any plans to do any more in English? I know our listeners would like to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. We did an interview with Patrick Schroeder, who is actually a host of FSN TV. It's basically, it's like an... I don't know. I guess you can call it like a radio podcast, but... But it's like a live TV in a way. Like he does these podcasts on live. People can call there, and he basically has like a video feed, live video feed. I think it's really really interesting what he is doing. I recommend to people check our interview out. I think it was really interesting, and we have also done interview with English made interview with activist from the Swedish branch with Per Sjögren. We talked about the incident that happened in Stockholm that I mentioned before. Absolutely, we're gonna do more shows in English. And if I may add that we also produced. Like a radio podcast about the Holocaust, where we went against all the mainstream lies and proved them wrong, like going from gas chambers to the 6 million number, like how it can't be true. And I think there is so many ways that we can use these radio podcasts for spreading our message, because it's extremely important that we are basically we can produce our material to the much wide spectrum in media. Like, is it articles, news, these podcasts, and maybe in the future, like TV even?
Yeah, I think it just keeps coming along better and better. I mean, the quality of some of these videos that we're seeing, some of these hangouts that people do as well, where they get together and it's like a podcast, but you can see the people talking. The technology is basically putting the means to achieve this in our hands. Now, I was just wondering that Holocaust podcast that you did, was that in English or was that in Finnish?
Unfortunately, it was in Finnish. It was 1 hour long, but it got a really good reception. Like, we got something like 1,000 views at least, and it's a good amount of watches. And it got some question going on, some talking going on, and it was actually part of our anti-Holocaust campaign where we distributed flyers and information to people by how many lies are there. So it was a really successful campaign by movement.
I've seen some of the pictures from that. I think you do that whenever they have the Holocaust Day, isn't it? You do some kind of activity.
Yep.
I'm trying to think. Didn't you surround one of the buildings with tape, hazard tape? I think. And that was one of them. And I've seen the pictures of the Holocaust lie or something on written in big writing somewhere.
We went to we shut down basically a couple of places with this hazard tape, like you call it. We went to like schools and universities, and we had like this flyer. Like a leaflet that was directed to the students, that the leaflet said that you're gonna hear all kind of arguments that the Holocaust happened, but when the school day is over, you should check our website and really question that did the Holocaust happen, and see our arguments that it didn't happen. Like, really, we were trying to put an equal playing field to the both sides of the arguments.
You know, you should always hear both sides of the argument so that they can weigh it up in their minds and see what they think is the truthful version of it. And this is why they try and silence us, because they know that we have the truthful version of it. That's why they try to silence it. They won't actually debate with us because they know that we will win the debate. I see you have plans for an English language version of the website too. How is that coming along?
I believe it's coming up great. I think it's really great to see that we're able to have an English version of our site, because I think our message is getting more popular internationally even. People want to support us from different countries, and there is a way to support us now. If you go to the nordfront.se, you can see from the in the right upper right corner there is the English flag. When you click it, you get the English language version open, and there is ways that you can support us. If you want to send us articles you have written, we accept them. There is even a chance if you want to donate money, maybe. There is account numbers and all if you want to give some kind of funding to us. And also, if you have any kind of ideas, like what we could do or what we should do, or if you need any kind of help with your own group, you can contact us by the website. There is an email address that you can contact us.
That's really great, because it just looks so impressive. I mean, it's a really neat looking site, and I know over the years people have looked at it and thought, well, I really like to understand what's being said here, because it looks really good, really impressive. And then Google Translate came along, and that's not that good. So the fact that you have an official English translation is excellent. I was looking at your the the political side of things the other day. There's a good page on that showing what you want to achieve that I recommend people look up when they hear this podcast. But we have a wide range of listeners all over the world. They may not really be aware of the history of Finland. And I know there's some really interesting stuff in the history of Finland. So do you think we could go into a couple of subjects to do with the country's history?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, how were the 1930s for Finnish nationalism? Did you have fascist or national socialist organizations back then?
Yeah, we had quite multiple fascist and national socialist organizations. It was in late 1920s, all around back in the 1920s and 1930s, the threat of communism was there, and especially in Finland when our neighbor was the Soviet Union. So there was a big anti-communist movement in the 20s and 30s. It was in late 20s when there was a movement called Lapua Movement. It was really an anti-communist, some might say fascist movement. They were known for their radical tactics. They were able to draw 50,000 men to capital for a peasant march. It was really a great show, way to show how much power they had. And one of the things they did was that they took these known communists and they would beat them up and take them to their car and drive them to the eastern border, where they told them to march to the Soviet Union because it's their promised land, basically.
Excellent.
So there was a lot of radicalism, really, really radical tactics they had. And one of the things that they could achieve was that because they had so much influence and power, they were able to force the government to shut down all the communist presses and parties, basically. The government had to sign a law that meant that communist organizations couldn't be active in Finland. And I think the Lapua Movement is a great example of a radical street movement that was able to make a change in the society, and that is one of our examples for our resistance movement, basically, like a people's movement going on that can influence our society. But then Lapua Movement, it was in early 30s. What happened was that they kept continuing putting these Reds to the cars and driving them to the eastern border. What happened was that they actually kidnapped our ex-president and they beat him up and all that, but that was too much. People pretty much kind of abandoned the movement by then. It was losing support because people thought that it was too much. And then there was in 1932, I believe, there was like an attempted coup by the Lapua Movement. They gathered around civil guard members where the Lapua Movement was really popular. They gathered them around and they wanted to make a coup, but I believe it was the president talked them over to not do anything coup related, so it pretty much melted down there. And then the Lapua Movement the government ordered the Lapua Movement to be banned, basically.
That's a shame.
Yes, and from the Lapua Movement born the patriotic People's Movement, which was absolutely a fascist party. It had a strong sympathies towards corporatism, and it drew lots of inspiration from Mussolini. And it had, of course, it had some inspiration from the NSDAP from Germany. They had their own uniforms. They had like a black suit going on and blue tie, and it was a, and they used the Roman salute or fascist salute, whatever you want to call it. So it was purely a fascist movement, and it was, a fascist party. And it had something like 80,000 men in its ranks, and it was really professional. Like, it was kind of ahead of its time when you look at it now, and it was so so well organized that every member had to pay. I believe it was like 2% of monthly salary to the party, so they could keep it running, and. And it had some success in parliament. I think they got something like 10% of the votes in the elections in the 30s. And then there was, of course, we had some national socialistic parties in Finland too. Probably most successful was it was called Suomen Kansanjärjestö. It was like a Finnish people's organization, translated. They had something like 10,000 members at the best. They had contacts to the Germany, to the NSDAP even. But what happened was that the leader of the party had some changes in his life, and he moved away from the capital. And then what happened was that the party basically melted down. But there was some multiple national socialistic organizations in Finland back then. But they weren't that popular as the PPM or the Patriotic People's Movement. We had some fascist and national socialistic organizations back then. Yes.
It sounds like you have a wonderful heritage of nationalism in Finland. I know today that people would love to just get hold of the traitors that are in power today and take them for a car ride. The fact that they actually did that in Finland.
Well, I can't wonderful. Comment on that.
That is wonderful. Well, I've been told that the Winter War was an epic victory against the communists that other nationalists may find inspiring. Could you give us a brief outline of it?
Absolutely. Winter War was in 1939, and in 1940s, it was a war against the Soviet Union. What happened was that the Soviet Union wanted more land from Karelia, which was our land, and we didn't want to give that land to them, because the reason they wanted this land from Karelia was that because they wanted to secure the perimeter of St. Petersburg or Leningrad back then, and we didn't want to give that land. So basically what happened was that then the Soviet Union decided to set up a false flag operation. Basically, they claimed that Finland has used artillery against Soviet Union. It sounds crazy, like we would fire first against Soviet Union, but that's what they claimed back then. What happened was that the Soviet Union attacked after that, and there was like... And we need to understand that Finland had something like 4 million people living in our country back then, and the Soviet Union had over 100 million. So I think it shows like it was like a smaller country against this huge country. In the front line, we had something like... over 300 men, but something about 300,000 men, when the Soviet Union had 1 million soldiers in the front line. And if you look at the tank account, we had something like about 30 tanks in our army overall, and the Soviet Union had 3,000. So you can see the scale that was going on. And but what happened was that our brave soldiers hold the line, and we could the Winter War it went on for 105 days, and then what happened was they signed a peace treaty, because Soviet Union couldn't really break our lines. Of course, when the war was about to be over, our troops were really exhausted and our nation was exhausted, but we could hold the line. But then peace treaty was signed in 1940s. We lost the land in Karelia, a lot of the land of the Karelia, I mean, and also there was some other peace terms we need to give to them, but today we can see it as an really bravery fight against the communists. And thing is that our country was in a civil war back in the 1980s, and there was a lot of like a grudge going on inside our people. A lot of hatred between the old reds and the whites, basically. So when the Winter War began, basically all the grudge that was between the reds and the whites had to be forgotten, because our country was attacked by this one enemy. So we had to unite as a country, as a people. So in a way, you could say that the Winter War helped us to repair our country in a way, because after the Winter War, our people was more. There wasn't like these grudges that meant that much after the Winter War.
You had to get together to fight against the one enemy, and because of that, you had a narrow escape from the USSR. Really, just by winning that, just with a small group. I mean, that's a third of you, a third of 300,000 Finns to a million Soviets. I mean, that's quite some odds. I mean, that's an amazing victory. Well, let's go back a little bit further into the history then. Now, I know that Finns are very lucky in the fact that they have their own unique folklore, which is different to the Germanic and the Celtic myths. And this was collected and written down in the 19th century by Elias Lönnrot, I think, as the Kalevala. What do you know about this folklore? And does it still play an important role in Finnish culture today?
Yeah, the Finnish this mythological stories and all around these folklore stories are really interesting. They are really old tales, and they have been gathered around in this one book called Kalevala. And it, like you said, it was collected by Elias Lönnrot. He went in the region of Karelia back then, and he collected all these stories into this one book. And it has some really magnificent stories. It kind of shows the spirit our ancestors had. But there were some bits that Elias Lönnrot, the author, added by himself to the book, so in a way the stories are connected now better. So there was a little bit adding there, so it's not like 100% accurate to the stories our ancestors had, but it has lots of truth in the book also. And Kalevala is an interesting book because probably most of your listeners know J.R.R. Tolkien. He was actually a big fan of Kalevala. One of the first writings Tolkien wrote was about this story in Kalevala that he took from Kalevala, and he wrote his own version of it. And it's called the story of Kullervo. You can find it, you can Google it or something. It's really interesting that it made such a big impact on a person who is really well known as an author these days.
Do you think he spoke Finnish then, or did he read an English translation of it?
I believe he probably read an English translation of it because he probably read an English translation of it, of the book, and I believe the Kalevala inspired some bits of the Lord of the Rings. Even this is my understanding of the issue, and also when it comes to Finnish mythology and all that. there are great stories, and also there is I think it's interesting to compare our mythology to the Norse ones, like what they had in Sweden and Norway, because main god had like a hammer too, which was an anvil. Like Thor had Thor's hammer, and we had what do you call it? Was Ukko. Ukko was our big god back then.
Yeah, I've seen the images. I thought it was a picture of Thor, the blacksmith, and then I read a caption, and it said it was Ukko from the Kalevala. I do think that there's a similarity there, but they're still quite different from the Germanic ones, aren't they? From what I hear.
Yeah, they are still kind of their own thing, but I believe they were probably influenced by the Germanic ones and vice versa. Basically, my good comrade of mine, who is knows a bit more about these things, said that it's probably also possibility that some of the Finns back then worshipped the same gods as the Vikings did and all that. But I think it would be interesting to study these things more, as when you look at the like really old history of Finland, there is even some claims that there was a big like kingdoms in Finland, but like we had like ancient kings. But it's more like a theory, and you need to be a little bit skeptical about it.
But I think it was all handed down as folklore, and it was handed down as oral folklore. And this poet travelled all the way around Finland in the 19th century, collecting these stories and writing them down. It's similar to in Wales. We had all this folklore and all these histories and genealogies, and they were handed down orally, and they weren't written down until fairly late in the Middle Ages, and they were written down in the old language of Welsh, which hasn't changed. And a lot of the place names today, the Welsh place names, have been the same since before the Saxons came, and they're named after these people in this folklore. So we know that they were real people, but it wasn't nearly so detailed as a Kalevala. And as you say, it's that is unique to the Finnish people, and it's very detailed. I think I'm going to have to try and get a copy of it in English myself and have a read of it. Well, this has been really great, Juhani. I've really enjoyed today. Thank you very, very much for coming on here, and hopefully we'll get you on here again at some point in the future. So thank you very much for being on Aryan Insights, and thank you very much, listeners, for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
Wake up!